Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com. Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland in today for Lori Walsh. Each week, In the Moment gathers the week it was in politics, and then we bring our Dakota political junkies in to provide their knowledge. Today, we welcome John Hunter, the publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, thanks for being here.
Hi, Kara. Thanks for inviting me.
And we also have executive editor of the Aberdeen American News, J.J. Perry. Thanks to you as well for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
So breaking news today, if we can change things up just a bit, President Trump said not long ago that he's going to sign an executive order to address his zero tolerance immigration policy that resulted in thousands of family separations. And he's criticizing the Democrats. The Democrats say he can do it. And now he's going to sign an executive order. John, you want to go first?
Why not? yeah, it's a, you know, in some senses, it's, you might call it politics at its worst. There seemed to be no one who really thought this was a good idea, but everyone spent time blaming others. And so we're glad to see the executive order come through. There were a couple of Republican bills that would have addressed that. Senator Mike Rounds had issued a statement. He was co-signing on one that by Senator Ted Cruz. I think there was some discussion that those two bills, while they had a similar intent, wouldn't mesh with each other when they kind of came together in conference committee. One was in the House and one was in the Senate. So, it was a terrible situation, and wish it would have not happened. But we'd like to see that resolved and get on to some more sane immigration debate.
JJ, anything to add?
I think any movement forward is probably good movement. This was not benefiting everybody, especially not these kids that are kind of separated and with not really a great plan of what was going to happen with them. Some of them had been kind of separated for quite some time. So this wasn't a good thing for anybody, and I'm glad to see that the president has taken a step forward to rectify this. And we do need sensible immigration reform, you know, but it's easier said than done. So we'll see what the next step is.
President Trump is quoted as saying, "We're going to keep families together, but we still have to maintain toughness of our country to be overrun by people, crime, and by all the things that we don't stand for and that we don't want." Now, the Trump base, all of the reporting I've seen, the Trump base supports whatever he is doing, the zero tolerance policy. But the outcry from others is totally, totally different. So how do you mesh? How does the president mesh together his base of supporters who are all in and support his decisions versus the outcry?
Well, I think the first thing is that you have to get branches of government together on this thing. Even though recent presidents have been able to, issue executive orders on some of these things, really an issue as big as immigration. Remember, we're a country of immigrants essentially, and so it does require a lot of people kind of coming together. And one of the first things that needs to be done, of course, is to remove the rancor and the labels of R's and D's behind people's names to try to come up with something. And I think it requires compromise that we can get a law that is somewhere in the middle that could be enforced. But the skeptics among us don't see that people shedding their labels and compromising much lately.
Let's move on now to Kristi Noem announced this morning that Larry Roden is her pick for running mate. Tell me a little bit about Larry Roden. JJ, do you want to go first?
Oh, yeah, sure can. Well, I think a lot of your listeners will know State Senator Larry Roden. He's from Union Center, South Dakota. He's been in the legislature since 2001, so he's switched from the House to the Senate in that time. I didn't think it was a very surprising name, but I guess, pieces here for the Nome campaign is that's a really pretty recognizable name in the state. Now, he has to be, selected here this weekend at the GOP convention for the state. And I think that's on Saturday, right? Gene, correct me if I'm wrong. But that'll be kind of the next step here to see how things go. Now, I know I've been reading the blogs and kind of looking out there a little bit today just to see what the reaction is. And, you know, there is a little bit of a schism in our state Republican Party as far as maybe kind of those conservative platforms and things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday.
Surprised at all, John Hunter, about how she went about making the announcement?
Well, no, but she is generally... positioned herself as a kind of farmer, rancher, small business person, which really is the same as Larry Roden. And so a lot of times people choose someone a little different than as maybe a little bit as JJ was describing, to maybe to satisfy another portion of the party. But, you know, the whole lieutenant governor, a little bit like vice presidents, is that they're a little bit more symbolic and maybe used for campaigns rather than really being kind of part of the government when it comes. In South Dakota, the lieutenant governor is president of the Senate, but can have widely varying views or responsibilities other than that. Some have chosen to make it much bigger, and the governors would make that decision whether they want to put that in place. Other times it's almost ceremonial, with the exception of that position's responsibility during the legislative session. So we don't know what position, you know, how either Larry or Billy Sutton's running mate would be positioned once it is. But for now, it's something for people to talk about during a campaign.
Well, and John, you know, just to jump in, I know that Nome had said that she sees that lieutenant governor spot as maybe more of a part-time, is how she described it, lieutenant governor, that she feels that a lot of these decisions do need to be made at the governor's level, and kind of described Matt Michaels and Dennis Dugard as sort of the not the models right. That she's going to follow exactly. And I know Matt Michaels has done some committees and different things beyond just, as you said, the usual traditional role of the lieutenant governor. So
mm-hmm. Right, and yeah. Billy Sutton hinted that he wanted Michelle LaValle full-time.
Yes,
yet and that, remaining that, to be seen, he said.
That has been done, and right. And of course, some people, you know, especially after Dennis Dugard, would consider that person as a potential governor in the future. I mean, since mm-hmm. Mike Rounds named Dennis Dugard as his running mate 8 years later, Dugard was elected. But that's actually been pretty rare in South Dakota history. Mm-hmm. Only one other that I remember kind of was intentionally, you know, followed that path when Nils Boe went from lieutenant governor to governor. Two other times in the last 100 years, the lieutenant governor became governor, but it was both on one on the death of Governor George Mickelson when Walter Dale Miller became lieutenant governor, and then Harvey Wolman, of course, became our last Democrat governor when Dick Knipe resigned to become ambassador to Singapore.
Are we at all surprised with the announcement coming on social media and not a traditional press conference?
I'm not surprised. You know, I think that it helps the candidates to get their message out at the time they want, with the kind of spread of the information that they want. I think it does fire folks up, because that message can a lot of times spread exponentially. Now, Billy Sutton, of course, made his announcement at a news conference. You know, I don't know which is the better sort of process, other than I think folks maybe get a little more engaged quickly when they see things come over their feeds or their friends share these things. So I think it's probably a combination of both, but those candidates both did it a little differently. And now, if Billy Sutton had done his by social media, I don't know what Christine Ohm might have done. She might have done something a little different that way.
Are we at all worried, John Hunter, about the, you know, Christine Ohm is saying she wants more transparency, more open government, but yet announces this way and then doesn't have to take questions?
No, and part of it is because it's really still preliminary action that she is proposing this to the convention.
She is not
able to say this is the person. And so I think, and the press will certainly be in place at the convention when it really becomes, but that's when it becomes official. Now, it's likely, and I can't remember the last time that that would has that someone has nominated one person and the party nominate another one. Nevertheless, I'm not worried at all.
Okay, so the Republican convention this weekend in Pierre, Lieutenant Governor candidate on the docket as well. What do we need to pay attention to there?
Well, JJ, you may want to jump in here too, but there are other, you know, in South Dakota, other candidates or other offices come up at the convention too. There's actually quite a bit of activity in addition to setting the platform and kind of those things, but candidates for other spots. And it can get kind of lively.
Yeah, and, you know, the Attorney General's race will be interesting, and this is one that is picked at the conventions. The Democrats had already picked Randy Seiler, who was most recently the U.S. Attorney for the District of South Dakota. He's a longtime South Dakotan. He was actually from our neck of the woods up here, Campbell County, Harriet, up in northeastern South Dakota. And so he's about as strong a candidate as the Democrats can kind of put out there. So this weekend, the Republicans will pick their candidate.
Okay. And Secretary of State, State Treasurer, all of those other constitutional officers are selected at the convention as well.
Yeah, correct. There's several. And because of term limits, there's going to be a little bit more activity maybe this year than some others. But there are several of those kind of constitutional level positions that tend to rotate a little bit. So if a candidate or a officer is term limited out of one position, they can and have run for another position. Treasurer, auditor, those two in particular. But, you know, Commissioner of School Public Lands is in there. And so, yes, the Democrats finished theirs last weekend, Republicans this weekend, and then we'll know.
Any thoughts on Secretary of State candidates in the Republican Party? You think Chantel Krebs will be back on the...
Well, you know, I suppose she could be. I don't know that there's anything stopping her unless John knows something. You know, it'll be very interesting. Secretary of State's office, I think, is one of the critical positions here in our governance, and especially, you know, with the elections just having concluded, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, some of the problems on primary night. That is such an important role, and so whoever's in there, and we've seen sort of the good and the bad, I think, in the Secretary of State's office management. So, I don't know how it's going to shake out, but it's clearly an important role.
Democrats didn't select a candidate?
You know, you're catching me off guard a little bit on that one. I don't recall off the top of my head if they did or not. John, do you know?
Secretary of State, Alexandra Frederick.
Oh, okay.
Is
all right,
the
thanks.
Democrats nominee. I don't know her. So I don't know any background.
Okay. I just want to give our listeners just a little side note that Christine Ohm is going to join the program tomorrow. She's mostly going to discuss IHS legislation, but we most certainly will ask her questions about her selection of Larry Roden as well. So let's talk a little bit about Secretary of State Chantel Krebs wanting all of South Dakota's 66 counties to have a backup plan for the November 6th general election after the problems that we saw scattered around the state on primary night. What kind of crunch time, money, that kind of thing does this present for counties, do you think? JJ, you can go first.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, there is a little bit of a crunch time here because I think it's mid-August that she's looking to hear some solutions for some of the issues that came up on the primary election day. We had some significant problems here in Brown County, and it's with these e-poll books. So these are the electronic poll books, and if you went and they kind of looked you up on a little computer and then printed out a sticker with all your information, that tells the precinct workers which ballot you should get, so which precinct you're in, and are you an R or a D, and who you get to select. So when that machine went down, which is what happened in some of the other counties, then they had to go rely on those printed, old-fashioned, you know, poll books. Here in Brown County, that meant somebody had to run from the basement of our county courthouse upstairs to the auditor's office and keep running back down, up and down with these rolls. So a backup system is actually would be fantastic. I think that for the most part, voting here kind of went on as scheduled, except for there was just longer lines. There were some other problems with ballots and things, so I can understand the Secretary of State's frustration with this because the counties pick and choose how they want to essentially, you know, manage their elections.
John Hunter?
Well, JJ is absolutely correct. The authority lies with the with the counties, and although I think many of them look to the Secretary of State's office for advice, there's kind of two issues that are going on here. One, the paper ballots or the paper documentation, the poll books, are particularly valuable, and I never really saw a need to make that electronic. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's something, can we put it on a computer? Sure. Should we? I don't know. You might have a server go down, which is exactly what happened. The central server went down of this private party to do that. But that's not really the central issue of this. And the central issue are these voting centers, wherein in which in some counties have chosen to say, look, you can vote where at a place other than the one designated by your precinct. So in other words, here in Madison, where I went to vote, there was only one place I can vote, and that is at the Dakota Prairie Playhouse, and the same table with my precinct number and ward number over it. These voting centers are established in some counties where you can go, and regardless of what precinct you are, pretend it's a rural precinct, but you work in a larger city, you can go to this central voting center and do that. Now, that would require some sort of electronic communication so people don't vote under that same name in two different places. So that is part of an issue, too, and I think some counties may be rethinking that voting center idea if it's going to rely on electronic poll books that may or may not be reliable.
Well, and John, you know, I think the other problem with that is, you know, I live in Aberdeen. The first year we had voting centers here in Brown County, I went 20 minutes away and voted in Groton just to see how it worked at their voting center. And
now, that's a good journalist. I'm glad you did.
There you go. You're just checking out the scene, right? you know, they have to have all those paper ballots for each race that might be happening in, you know, the unlikely event somebody in Frederick up in the other part of the county would want to vote for their little local election in Groton. So they have to actually have those ballots there or some sort of way to be able to let folks vote if that's where they're at.
All right, lots to keep an eye on and to talk about in the coming weeks and months ahead. John Hunter, JJ Perry, thanks so much for taking time and coming on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kara.